Is that okay? Then now we're going to start, and especially after Ariel asked for the two beginning nivuot as the Gimel de Paranuta, we already learned Yirmiyahu Perek Aleph, and you've learned this also, with the challenge of Yirmiyahu, who's saying, I don't know if I can properly interpret my nivuot, and therefore Hashem challenges him with the very unique question of Ma'ataro'eh. Then Yirmiyahu, how do you interpret it, giving us a sense that these are nivuot that are very easily misinterpreted. So Yirmiyahu sees two visions. He sees a makel shaked, which highlights the fact that Hashem is coming like a makel in the form of punishment, shaked in an intense, very quick fashion. And secondly, Sir Nafuach Ani Ro'eh, which we know is going to be incorporated not only here, but in Sefer Yechezkel to mean the swollen pot imagery, which is the imagery not of a fortified city, but on the contrary, of a besieged city. So he already sees intense punishment, simultaneously a siege, which is going to in fact serve as the beginning of the end. The proof is Yechezkel Perach of Dalet, because in Yechezkel Perach of Dalet, on the 10th of the 10th, Asiri B'Tevet of the 9th year, Hashem gives him a nevuah, it's time for the pot. Again, it's time for the siege. And note that after that, Hashem doesn't give Yechezkel another nevuah until 5 months after the Chorban, which basically tells us the siege was the end for all intents and purposes. No one has a chance of survival. They're going to be weakened. This is what we commemorated on Shavuos Ha'Av Tammuz, the breaking of the siege during Bayit Rishon. It seems to have been that those inside wanted to break out because they knew that they didn't have an alternative. This brings us to Perek Bet, which begins with Nechama, which is the predominant ploy of a Navi, in order to keep his audience after very harsh rebuke, and then he'll go right back into rebuking them, telling them that they're going to be sent off to the lands of Mitzrayim, and this is all because they left Hashem. Now, if you look carefully at these prakim, again, what I mean by this is Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, and Vav. We talk about more or less terms that, believe it or not, are not as bad as Sefania. He sounds more like Yishayahu. Your land is going to be weakened for the other nations to come. You're going to suffer under the hands of the other nations. Your shepherds, your leaders themselves have been corrupt. Nothing really, I hope you don't mind this phrase, out of the ordinary of what we've seen from the Nevi'im of Paranut until now. As a matter of fact, if you look at Perek Gimel, you find something quite fascinating, and that is that Yirmiyahu here addresses Meshuvah Yisrael, Perek Gimel Pasuk Vav, Vayomar Shem Elai B'mei Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Please keep in mind that this is the second time that Yirmiyahu recognizes a date. Right? Other than that, we're going to see tremendous amounts of achronology in Sefer Yirmiyahu. Hara'ita Sherasta Meshuvah Yisrael. Have you seen what Meshuvah Yisrael, those who have returned to Yisrael, have you seen what they've done? And if one understands what's going on historically during the time of Yoshiyahu, we're now sometime after, I would argue, sometime between 622 and obviously 609 BCE, when there's tremendous nationalism going on, when because of the religious reform of Yoshiyahu, there's domestic peace, the Assyrians are falling, Tzfania's nevuot have been pushed off, they've been postponed. And lo and behold, people who were exiled only 20 to 70 years earlier to the northeastern lands of Assyria, what's happening? They're coming back. Why is this so exciting? Because this is a fulfillment of whose nevuot? Of Yishayahu's nevuot. I would like to even contend that this could have been, like Yishayahu said, after the destruction of the north, then, Vahi Bacharit HaYamim, remember all his Acharit HaYamim nevuot, things are going to be wonderful, things are going to be at peace. And therefore, Chazal tell us, just like Chizkiyahu could have been Mashiach, who could have been Mashiach, leading the people back in common government and self-rule, Yoshiyahu HaMelech. And here we find that people really are coming back, which makes sense. The Assyrians are no longer ruling the northern parts of Eretz Yisrael, which is so depressing. Because that means that had this really happened, maybe the nevuot of Tzefania never would have come true. Maybe, again, Yirmiyahu hasn't delivered his real harsh nevuot yet, maybe those nevuot of Paranut would have been cancelled, and then they would have never been canonized. How does that sound? That sounds like a lofty dream, because unfortunately that doesn't happen. Yirmiyahu turns to the people who have returned to the northern parts, and he says, shame on you. You're the ones who went into exile. You should have known better. As soon as they came back to Eretz Yisrael, Hochahi al kol hargavah v'altachat kol eitz ra'anan v'tiznisham, what are they doing? They're reverting back to their ways of Avodah Zarah. Are you out of your mind, he says? V'omar acharei asotah et kol eile tashuv v'lo shava. Again, you should have been the ones to return and you haven't. V'tira bagoda achotah Yehuda. And now you're leading your rebellious sister that we recited this morning in the keynote, Ohala, is Yehuda, says Yechezkel. Ha'ohel is Shamron. Ha'ohel Shalash, yes, her own temples. And Ohel Liba is Yehuda. My Ohel is inside of her, is in Nachalat Yehuda. So Shemanyu Meshuva Yisrael. I should have just given you what's a Sefer Kritut, your get, and send you off so that you wouldn't lead Yehuda in this terrible deterioration. And now you're leading to terrible things. So again, he's trying to get them, obviously, to stop Avodah Zarah, to start turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu a little more. But note that he doesn't really mention any idea of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash until we get to Perek Zayin. Sorry, we're going to have to do a little skipping if we're going to finish it all in 1 hour. So when we turn to Perek Zayin, we know that there definitely is a slight change of tone. How do I know that? Firstly, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph begins, Hadavar Sharaya El Yirmiyahu Meit Hashem Lemor. That definitely connotes a new nevuah. I don't know when, and we're going to see that it's going to be difficult to figure out when, but we're going to do it together. Here we go. What did Hashem tell Yirmiyahu to say? Amod B'Shar Beit Hashem. Even though Chazal said that Yirmiyahu hung out in the Shvakim, keep in mind the historical context. When is he in the marketplaces? Only when Huldah and Tzfania are around, giving us a sense that after Tzfania died out, and he probably died out, again, by the 13th year or so of Yoshiyahu, and then Yirmiyahu takes over, and where is he going to start to deliver his nevuot? Then he is going to become, so to speak, in place of Tzfania, dealing with the aristocracy, the intellect. They're going to be the ones hanging out by Har Beit Hashem, which tells you, by the way, is everyone worshipping Avodah Zarah? Not necessarily. He's actually talking, I hope you don't mind the phrase, to the relatively frum people who are still hanging out by the Beit HaMikdash. But note, he's going to tell them, what are they doing? They are in the Beit HaMikdash, but soon he's going to tell them, yeah, but then right after they offer their Karban Tumen in the morning, they walk down the snake path. You're all familiar with the snake path that leads you straight to Gabe and Hinnom. Right underneath Har Tzion, and that's where they're sacrificing to Molech. They're bringing their children as sacrifices to God. Kama Hashem Tzvot Elokei Yisrael, Hitivu Derchechem, Amal Elechem, Vashakna Etchem B'Makom Hazeh. Now I know that he definitely is, I'm going to say, earlier on as opposed to later on. What do I mean by this? We're going to see that from Perek Aleph through Perek Vav, he definitely was speaking about sometime between the 13th to the 18th year of Yoshiyahu. Again, he's speaking during the time that the people are still sinning. After the 18th year, from the 18th till the 31st year of Yoshiyahu, we basically don't find the nevuot of Yirmiyahu because they're irrelevant. Because he's probably telling them, Yesher Koach, you're doing great, the religious reform, people are starting to worship God again, he loves this, none of those nevuot were preserved. Now he's going to be speaking during a time wherein, on one hand, they're starting again in their Avodah Zarah ways. On the other hand, Hashem says, Ashakna etchem b'makom hazeh. There is a possibility that I'll let you stay here. What's implied, by the way? Ashakna etchem. Should have said ashakna, the end, right? Ani ashaken, or ani ashkon, b'makom hazeh. Here, ashakna means, maybe I'll let you stay here. Wait to see how things get worse. Al tiftachu lachem al devrei hasheker. Now we find, for the first time, Yirmiyahu addressing Nevi'ei Sheker, who are saying, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem Hema. Nothing can go wrong, because we have the Beit HaMikdash, this is the house of God. And therefore, Hashem's going to protect us. Oh, really? Kim heitev titivot archachem vat malilchem. Emaso tasu mishpat beinishu vein reyehu. Now, only if you start to work on social justice, only then is there a possibility. Pasuk Zayin v'shikanti etchem b'makom hazeh. What's already hinted to? Maybe if you work on yourselves, I'll let you stay in Yerushalayim. What's absent? That I'll stay. Sure enough, again, Yirmiyahu continues and says, again, because what in fact is going to happen? Because you're relying on all those who say that everything is fine, we can go ahead and commit adultery and murder and kill and steal. And then we go to the Ma'arat Peritzim. We hide away in, again, our place of our hideout, which is Hayah HaBayit HaZeh. They think that the Beis HaMikdash is a Ma'arat Peritzim, the place where all the crooks hide out. Why? Because what can they do there? This reminds me a little of the Mafia. You know, in the church, you say a couple of Hail Marys, and then everything's fine. So that's what you think, says Hashem? If that's the case, HaBayit HaZeh Asher Nekra Shmi Alav Beinechem Gam Anochi Hinei Ra'iti Yinum Hashem. I see how you're using my Beit HaMikdash, and therefore this is what I want you to do. L'chuna El Mekomi Asher B'Shilo. This is our first reference to the fact that the Mishkan in Shilo, even though there are hints to it in Sefer Shmuel, now we know for sure that it was destroyed. Asher Shikantu Shmi Sham Barishona Ruet Asher Asiti Lo Mipnei Rat Ami Yisrael. You see that I can destroy my home, I can destroy a Mikdash. V'ata Yana Sotchem Et Kol HaMasim HaIlonim עם השם, ודבר אליכם השכם ודבר ולא שמעתם, ואקרא אתכם ולא עניתם. Here it comes, I hope you're all ready for this. This is the first time that Yirmiyahu mentions Chorban. Pasuk Yudalid, ועשיתי לבית אשר נקרא שמי עליו, אשר אתם בוטחים בו, ולמקום אשר נתתי לכם ולאבותיכם, כאשר עשיתי לשילו. Do you remember, who remembers from Troyasar, who's the first Nevi who mentions the possibility of the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed? Micha, excellent. Remember Tzion Tzadet HaRash? Did we see it in Tzfania? For sure, Yom Shoah, Moshoah, everything's going to be destroyed. Yirmiyahu hasn't mentioned it. Why not? Because at the beginning of Yoshio's career, things are... Even when they're bad, again, they're not so bad. And then when Yoshiyahu truly has his reform, things are going great. Which tells us, can anyone guess what time period we are in now? Where he's saying, okay, it's time for Micha and Tzfania's Nevuot. The Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. It must be the time of Yehoyakim. Just to remind you, we have a kina about this that we recited this morning as well. When Yoshiyahu didn't listen to Yirmiyahu and he went to fight against Paro Necho in Megiddo and he's killed there, at that moment on, the Egyptians take control of Eretz Yisrael. The first king, Ahaziah, the son of Yoshiyahu, is a nationalist. He rebels. He's cast off, and then his younger brother, Eliakim, whose name is changed to, he takes over and he's going to be a pro-Egyptian. And ultimately, he says, look at my father, that from father of mine, it didn't help him because then he was killed to death, and now we may as well just support the mighty Egyptians. Hashem says, no, I'm going to do the same thing that I did to the north, I'm going to do to you as well. And this is where we find the uniqueness of Yirmiyahu coming up in the next pasuk. V'ata, al titpalel ba'ad ha'am hazeh, v'al tisa ba'adam rina'u tfilah, v'al tifgabi. Recognize this, we don't find this by any other Navi, and that's why in Echa, Yirmiyahu says, Satam tfilati, based on Yirmiyahu Perek Zayin. Hashem, you didn't allow my tfilah to reach heavenwards, because Hashem said, you're not allowed to daven, which is so strange, because every other Navi learned by Moshe Rabbeinu, what's his role? He's supposed to pray to Hashem, ba'adam hazeh. V'al tisa ba'adam rina v'tfilah. No support for them. V'al tifki, be stop bothering me. Ki neni shomei otach. Basically, what do we hear from now? That there's no turning back. In charo'eh mahem o'usim bariyuta v'chotot Yerushalayim, habanim olaktim meitim, havot mevarim et ha'esh, hanashim lashot batzeik. It's a whole family affair. Everyone is performing their barbecues to Baal together as they're pouring their wine libations. Achen ko amar Hashem pasuchaf. Hine api v'chamati nitzchem el ha'makom. The fire is out and it's not going to be extinguished. So take a look at this. Again, we find in this perek, we find that Hashem says the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Component number two, Yirmiyahu, you're not allowed to daven. And the last part of the perek, Pasuk Chafalev, Ko'amar Hashem, Elokei Yisrael, Olotechem Sfuol Zivchechem Vechlu Basar, Ki Lo Dibarti Et Avotechem, Lo Tziviten Bi Amotziotem Meretim Tzrayim Al Divrei Ola Vazevach. And lastly, tell the people that they can stop worshipping their Karbanot already because it's not doing it for me, says Hashem. Again, because I never really wanted you to worship Karbanot. The obvious question, Yishayahu brings this up also, so did Micha. What do you mean? We have Sefer Vayikra. We have about 9 chapters full of different laws dealing with sacrifices. What do you mean you didn't command us to do this? And all the parshanim explain, I didn't command you to bring karbanot through which you're going to express hypocrisy, right? And then go ahead and obviously worship other gods as well. So for this, avdah ha'amunah, you may as well just stop and start mourning already. So notice Perek Zayin with these three components. And the question is exactly when did he deliver this Nevuah, which clearly is much harsher than the previous six chapters of Yirmiyahu. We turn for a moment to... Very nice. Beautiful. Yafeh Ma'od. I'm sorry. Here we go. That's right. Annie remembers this. To Perek Yud Aleph. You turn to Perek Yud Aleph. Exactly. And anyone who's learning Yirmiyahu, I'll just tell you that he more or less repeats these ideas in Chetet Yud. So now Perek Yud Aleph. Hadavar Sha'ayal Yirmiyahu Me'et Hashem Lemor. So that doesn't help us much either, other than to hear that this is also the beginning of a new nevuah. Shemua tivrei habrit hazot. We hear of a new idea, and that is that I want you to tell the people of Yehuda about this brit. And according to most parshanim, it's talking about brit Sinai. Remind them of their allegiance to the Torah that they promised that they would uphold. And what did they do instead? Va'amarta lehem ko amar shem lokei Yisrael arur ha'ish asher lo yishma tivrei habrit hazot. What does this remind you of? Parashat Kitavo, right? Arur ha'ish, hen asher tivit et avotechem biyom otziotam eretz Mitzrayim mikor ha'barzel limor shemu b'koli v'asitim otam k'chol asher tavetchem v'itim li la'am v'anochi eyeh lahem l'elokim. Remind them of their allegiance to the Torah, l'manakim et ha'shvua shenishpati l'avotechem latit l'meret eretz avat chalavu dvash, and remind them of Parashat Kitavo, which added the component of Eretz Yisrael, which meant that they agreed to listen to the Torah, and on that condition I would bring them to the land of Israel. Next, ויאמר השם אלי, פסוק ו', קרא על כל הדברים האלה בערי יהודה וחוצות ירושלים לאמור, שמעו את דברי הברית הזאת ועשיתם אותם. כי העד העדותי באבותיכם ביום עלותי אותם מארץ מצרים, השכם והעד לאמור שמעו בקולי, and tell Bnei Israel that I've been saying this over and over again. Take a look now at pasuk tet. Apparently a new idea. What happens here? Hashem says, oh, by the way, Yirmiyahu, as you're reminding them about the Brit, that they're supposed to be listening to me, and they completely have not been. Vayomar Hashem Elai, Nimsa Kesher B'ish Yehuda U'V'Yoshvei Yerushalayim. What does this mean, Nimsa Kesher? There's been a conspiracy. You don't even know this, Yirmiyahu, but let me tell you, a conspiracy is going on. Shavu al avonot avotam harishonim asher me'anu l'shmoa et barai. And because they don't want to listen to my words. But who's going to be the one to speak the words of God? Yirmiyahu. So basically Hashem is telling him, there's a conspiracy against my words, i.e. there's a conspiracy against you. We don't really hear much about this, but Hashem says, I just want you to be aware there's a conspiracy against you. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Lachin Kamar Hashem, but don't worry, Yirmiyahu. Hinani mevi'a lehem ra'a asher lo yechulu latzeit mimena v'zakwe elai v'lo ishma lehem. In the end, they're going to end off completely destroyed. V'alchu arei Yudah v'yoshvei Yerushalayim v'zakwe el Elohim asher hem mekatrim lehem v'oshei elo yoshiyu lehem beit ra'atam. Because all these people who are conspiring against you have their own allegiances with these gods, and they're going to be killed off. Pasuk Yudalit, tell me if this sounds familiar. We have a Brit, we have a conspiracy, and now, Vata al titpalel ba'ad ha'amaze, v'altisa ba'adam rina utfila, verbatim, Hashem says, don't daven. Again, you can't say anything. So the question is Hashem literally repeating something to Yirmiyahu? That is a possibility. Giving us the impression, maybe Yirmiyahu was trying to daven, and Hashem says, I already told you, give it up. And or perhaps Hashem is repeating the same nevuah. But this is strange, because it's true that at times we'll have repetitive nevuah by different neviim. See? Yeshayahu Perek Bet Micha Perek Dalid. However, does it make sense that a Navi will incorporate and preserve for future generations the same exact nevuah? No. Again, so here we find a little remnant. Okay, don't daven. Mali didi beveti avsotam zivata harabim uvusar kodesh yavru malayach ki ravachem altalozi zayit ranan yefei pritoar kara Hashem shmech lekol hamula gedola heitit eisha leha. And now also the idea that the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Again, that basically takes us to Pasul Chaf Aleph. Lachin komra Hashem al anshei anotot mevakshim et nafshecha. Oh, now we're back in the conspiracy. Tell the people of Anotot. Who are these people, by the way? If you remember, Yirmiyahu Perek Aleph. Thank you. These are Yirmiyahu's fellow rejected Kohanim and Anotot. In other words, these are his cousins, his own family. Hamavakshim et nafshecha. These are the people, by the way, who want to kill you, Yirmiyahu. Leimor lotan avei b'shem Hashem v'lotan lipi adeinu. Stop prophesying in the name of God. We can't take these very harsh nevuot that you're giving. And then we won't kill you. Lachin kamar Hashem tzvot ni poked aleim abachorim yamutu bacharev v'nehem uvenotem yamutu barav. Don't worry, says Hashem. These are the people that I'm talking about. Again, all these people, alanshei anotot shnapakudatam. Within a year, they're going to die. And they're going to see that your words are true. Okay, that's very nice. Interesting nevuah over there. And sure enough, Perek Yud Bet, we find that Yirmiyahu is going to say, Hashem, if that's the case, Tzadiku Hashem, I really can't take the fact that I'm a walking korban, but if you're going to save me, then I guess you're righteous. And then we find a series of different masim simliim, different symbolic acts that Yirmiyahu performs. And he's going to continuously rebuke the people with basically no sense of any chronological time period that's given to us. We hear of a few more attempts on his life, and then we get to Perek Chafav. In Perek Chafav, we finally have, lo and behold, take a look, we have a date. Bereshit Mamlechut Yoyakim Ben Yoshiyahu Melech Yehuda. Now we're excited. We have a date. What does this mean, the beginning of the time period of Yehoyakim? So as I mentioned, Tzfania, together with Yirmiyahu, who's ruling or who's prophesying between about 640 to about 622, again, they're going to rebuke the people because they are still immersed in their idolatrous ways trickling down from Menashe. From 622 and on, the people really are doing well. And therefore, we don't hear basically any nevuot until 609. That's this year, Bereshit Mamlechet Yehoyakim. We're going to find, though, that Yehoyakim rules from 609 to 597 or 598, about 11 years that are there. Why is that significant? Again, Yirmiyahu is going to be delivering nevuot during this time period, but it's also significant to know what's going on worldwide. Sure. In the year 609, again, 612, Nineveh is destroyed, which basically is a sign for the fall of a nation. However, the fallen forces of Ashur are going to gather between, basically right directly south of the Euphrates in the area of Carchemish, more or less today's northern Lebanon. And this is going to be the area where Mitzrayim is going to want to vie for these fallen Assyrian lands, together with, obviously, the fallen army of Ashur, together with the Chaldeans, this up-and-coming country. Sure enough, this is the time period where Jehoiakim says, obviously, the Egyptians are going to win. And between 609 to 607, it seems like they are. Until the tide turns, and who takes over?
605.
The Chaldeans in 605, and they're going to come directly to conquer the trade routes of Yisrael. So keep this in mind, that this is still before the Chaldeans have taken over. It's between 609 and 605. That's a time period, and we'll prove it, for the first 4 years of Jehoiakim. And there still is a possibility of... Can anyone tell me a possibility of thwarting off the Gzar Din? No, but maybe alleviating the punishment. Maybe we'll have Chorban Beit HaMikdash, but maybe not so many people will be killed. So let's take a look at what happens in this chapter. Perach Chavav, this is going to sound very familiar. Hayat Davar Hazeh Me'etz Hashem Lemor, Kamar Hashem, Amo B'Chatzar Beit Hashem. Another Nevuah. So I want you to speak this. Maybe I'll alleviate some of the punishment. If, basically, they don't listen to my brit, then I'm going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Does that sound familiar? Yes, so it reminds us of Perek Zion, where Yirmiyahu already said this exact term. So why is he saying it again? So we're going to prove that he didn't say it again. Rather, this is the same Nivua. He gave it once. He said the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed just like the Mishkan and Shiloh. Sure enough, what happens? Pasuk Zion. Here things get very exciting, or I would say energetic. Sure enough, the Kohanim are there. And they hear Yirmiyahu saying, guess what? This gorgeous place of Mikdash is going to be destroyed. So when Yirmiyahu finishes talking, what do? They accuse him of being a Navi Sheker, and they want him dead. How can you say something so iconoclastic, like that the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed? Wow, what does this remind us of? The fact that Hashem said, oh, by the way, right after you're going to say this, you know, the thing about them having to listen to the Torah, there's going to be a conspiracy against you, and they're going to want to kill you. What do you know? This is it! Again, this is when it happens.
Even like Perek Aleph, where Hashem says, Ki itcha ani lehatzil.
Lati lecha. I'm going to need to be with you to save you, because there's going to be what to save you from, like them. Sure enough, the officers of Yehuda hear this, and they hear what's going on over here. So the Kohanim and the Nevi'im tell the Sarim, they tell the officers. We think that, by the way, in order to kill someone, this is interesting, on grounds of a Navi Sheker, who has to be the ones to convict him? And either God, meaning either God knows that one is a Navi Sheker, and then Mot Yumat, or he's killed by Skila, by Beit Din. Very nice. So who's Beit Din? Can imagine that there are Kohanim who serve on, thank you, again, the Rashi Ha'am. That's exactly it. So the Kohanim and the Nevi'im call, basically, they're calling Beit Din to order so that they can convict him and ultimately punish him through skila.
Convict somebody who gives a positive nivuah within a time frame.
Very nice. But they are so convinced. Beautiful. They're so convinced that he's giving this horrific nivuah that goes against everything that Hashem would want. So they're asking the Nevi'im, but don't worry, Annie's right, because what they're asking the Sarim, come on, it's time for a Mishpat Mavet. By the way, you shouldn't be surprised. Annie says, again, but there are certain rules, but what do you already know during this time period? You're already accused of a thank you. Again, they're not following any rules. Again, they're murderous. They're corrupt already during this time. And the level of morality is quickly waning. But still, let's try to follow the rules. Here we go. We think, based on what Yirmiyahu said, that you definitely have to kill him. And Annie is Yirmiyahu's defense lawyer. But basically, Yirmiyahu is his own defense lawyer. And he says, let me just tell you as follows. Hashem shlachani linaveh el habayit hazeh ve'el ha'ir hazot et kol hadvar masher shamatem. I am simply the messenger of God, and therefore... And almost like Pascal's wager again, it really pays for you to listen to me. Because let's say I'm right and you kill me, then you just killed a Navi Emet. That's right. And I'm trying to help you and alleviate your punishment. So really, it pays for you, he says. But in the meantime, it's up to you. Asili katova chayashar b'nechem. Ach yadoa teidu. And I want you to know that you're not following the rules. And he's right. Again, you follow the rules only if you can disprove me. But you can't disprove me. So I want you to know, in mimita moti moti, if you do go ahead with killing me, kidam naki atam notnim aleichem ve'la ir hazot ve'l yoshveha, then you're not just killing my innocent blood, you're basically leading all the people here to being killed because they're not going to listen to me. Ki ve'met shulchani Hashem aleichem ledaber bosnechem et kol hadvar me'ila. Sure enough, the sarim say, let's go back to the rules. The sarim say, wait a second. Yirmiyahu is relieved. They say, no, we're not going to convict him of being a Navi Sheker. Number one, because he quoted Yudke Vavke God. But that doesn't mean anything today. Rather, they say, but there's also precedent for what he's saying, meaning it's true that what he's saying is somewhat iconoclastic. Guys, isn't it nice to learn Tanakh and then to see it come alive before you? You're ready for the next pasuk? And what do they say? Micha ha-morashti ha-yan ni-ba b'mechizkel melech yudav ayyum al-kalam yudal imakom ha-shem tzot tziyon tzat tzacharash. Yes, I'm waiting to see smiles on all of your faces. Can you imagine learning Yirmiyahu? We just learned this 2 days ago. Again, and without learning Micha, you're like, okay, whatever they say. No, you saw this inside, and you could have offered this as a good defense, and for Yirmiyahu. Micha said something as iconoclastic. He was the first one. So don't accuse Yirmiyahu. They remember. Why would they remember the nevuahs of Micha, who, by the way, lived 120 years before? They probably don't even remember all his nevuah, but I guarantee they remember this one. Why?
It was the one day.
Of Micha? Yes, we do.
No, I'm saying that Micha's nevuah maybe had a date, and that's why they remember.
No, he didn't give it a time. Sorry? It leads to world peace, meaning maybe because he said it in the context of Yeshayahu's famous V'gar Ze'evim Keves, very nice. Again, why would they also remember such a nevuah of Tzion Tzadet Zacharash? Because they remember that even though Yerushalayim wasn't destroyed, 48 cities of Yehuda, meaning the beginning of the downfall of Yehuda, started with Micha, excellent. Why else? And because he was the first person ever to mention Chorban Beit HaMikdash. Would you remember that Nevuah even 100 years later? Anna, would you remember if someone told you that the Twin Towers would be destroyed? And then, like you see, and then someone else mentions it. By the way, do you still believe them? I don't know, but I'm going to remember such a crazy thing. So notice this. Again, Micha morashti hayanivi b'mei Chizkiyahu. And maybe we shouldn't kill Yirmiyahu because there seems to be precedent for what he's saying. He said this exact sentence. Of Tzion tzadet tacharash Yerushalayim miyim tiyavar b'ayt levamot yar. Ha'emeti mitu Chizkiyahu melech Yehuda. And everyone lauds Chizkiyahu. By the way, Chizkiyahu becomes a legend in Jewish history, even for this time period, and to a certain degree, almost a negative legend. What do I mean by this? What was Chizkiyahu famous for? What did he do? He saved Yerushalayim from Micha's prophecy. And he basically, if you remember the Nikvat Chizkiyahu, he brought the water source inside, but it was really because of his tshuva. He turned to God, and he's the one who Yeshayahu said prevented the negative nevuah from coming true. So they think, Chizkiyahu is such a legend, and he's the one who saved Yerushalayim from downfall. Why do I say he turned into a negative legend? On one hand, Sarei Yehuda say, look, Chizkiyahu didn't kill Micha for saying what he said. And so why should we kill Yirmiyahu? But Chizkiyahu also turns into a negative legend because he gave the people false hope. What do I mean by that? He showed that even when Nevi'im say that Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed, that, very nice, that it's reversible. And this is how history and memory work. They don't remember that Chizkiyahu did tshuva. What do they remember? They remember that Yerushalayim was saved and the Assyrian army completely ran away. So if you're retelling this, I can imagine that the history books, 100 years later, how do they retell that story of Chizkiyahu? Chizkiyahu
was a hero.
Chizkiyahu was a hero, and probably my great-grandfather fought against the Assyrian army and Yerushalayim was saved. Do you see this? Meaning, what part are they leaving out?
Teshuvah.
Very nice, Teshuvah. Right, that's pretty significant. So we're going to see over and over again that they still have this subconscious confidence that everything's going to be okay, despite all the destructive nevuah that Yirmiyahu was giving. Hello, Yiretz Hashem, Yechal Pnei Hashem, Yenechem Hashalara. So notice, by the way, what Annie's saying, they say, look, again, Micha gave a nevuah that didn't come true, again, during Chizkiyahu's time, but Chizkiyahu didn't kill him because the people really reversed it through tshuva, right? These are the righteous Sarei Yehuda saying it. So, maybe Yirmiyahu is telling us the truth, and maybe Again, you have no way of proving, what they're trying to say is you have no way of disproving a nevuah peranut, because what could people always do?
Shuvah.
Thank you. So we can't kill him on these grounds. Not only that, v'gam, pasuk chaf, v'gam ish hayam mitnavei b'shem Hashem, uriya ben shmaya mekriyat hayarim v'yinavei halat yirazot v'al aretz hazot. They said, maybe you don't even know. But there's another Navi going around, not in Yerushalayim, but the surrounding areas, and he's also saying like Yirmiyahu, which tells us, was Yirmiyahu alone in his nevuot emet? No, there were other Nevi'im for a while. But sure enough, as soon as the word gets out, again, Yirmiyahu is saved for now. They can't convict him. But sure enough, the king is going to find out about this, and he hears about Uriah, and what is he going to want to do? He's going to want to kill Uriah. Now, why is it easier to kill Uriah than to kill Yirmiyahu? He's going to go after Yirmiyahu also. But why does he first go after Uriah Hanavi? Because Yirmiyahu has just been saved by Sarei Yehuda, by the officers of Yehuda, whom we're going to find out very shortly, are people like Gemaryahu ben Shafan, Achikam ben Shafan, Gena, and we like the Shafan family. Gena, if you've learned Melachim, you'll remember why you like the Shafan family. Shafan was the sofer, again, who was the one who read what Chilkiyahu, some say, was actually Yirmiyahu's father. So in short, the Shafan and Yirmiyahu families are going to be very closely connected. They're going to, over and over again, protect Yirmiyahu. And these are the scribes of Yehoyakim. So instead of Yehoyakim going against his own officers who are protecting Yirmiyahu, what will he do instead? He'll go after helpless Uriah. And sure enough, Uriah runs to their ally Mitzrayim. Yehoyakim sends people, and Natan ben to get Uriah out of Mitzrayim, and he kills Uriah. He's hoping that what effect will this have on the people? Number one, it will certainly dishearten them. Any of the Nevi'ei Emet will now say, I better be quiet because I don't want Yehoyakim to kill me. And it will certainly, what's he hoping? This basically puts a subtle death threat on Yirmiyahu himself. Sure enough, the people wanted to earn the king's favor and also to have Yirmiyahu killed, but Achikam protects him. So now, lo and behold, I have a time period. I have the actual scene of the conspiracy that was hinted to in Perek Yud Aleph that related to Perek Zayin. So now I know that Zayin, Yud Aleph, Chafav are all the same nevuah. So what bothers me now? So why does he write it three different times in three different contexts? In order to answer this, we have to skip one more time to Perek Lamed Vav. Here we go. After you learn this Perek, you'll understand all of Sefer Yirmiyahu. Doesn't that make you feel great? I'll make you feel even better. You'll also, according to Chazal, you'll also understand Sefer Eicha. Here we go. Vayhi b'shana harevi'it liyoyakim ben Yoshiyahu. We're now 4 years later. This is going to be the most significant year in Sefer Yirmiyahu, or for that matter, in all of Jewish history. Doesn't that make you feel good? That this is a date that you will never forget. This is 605. It's like remembering 1939. What do I mean by this? Sorry? Very nice. Kristallnacht. Again, in the incorporation of the Nuremberg laws, right? That was basically, what would we call that? That was the beginning of the end, right? That was the beginning of the official implementation of the final solution. That's 605 in Jewish history, right? So these are 2 years that we don't forget. And the reason why I keep paralleling, you heard this in Tzifanya also, between the Shoah and Korban Bayit Rishon, was because the level of genocide of the two are the most parallel. When we speak about the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, it's true, there were a lot of torture. There was there were many people killed. There were horrific stories of Asara Harugei Malchut, but in terms of the actual death and destruction of the people, you can't compare. You can just prove it from the aftermath, right? What do I mean by this? After Roman times, right? Or let's even take the Great Rebellion of 70 CE, which obviously led to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Then we have, again, Aelia Capitolina, no Jews are allowed in Yerushalayim. Do the Romans prohibit them from living in Eretz Yisrael? No. As a matter of fact, you still have, just keep this in mind, you have three generations still of Tanaim living in Eretz Yisrael, in places like Yavne, Usha, Tzipori, Beit Sha'arim, and then ultimately working up for five generations of Amorei Eretz Yisrael in places like Tveria, Caesarea. So you definitely find, together with Churban, there was still simultaneous growth taking place within Am Yisrael. And not only that, but you still have, during this time, because of Bayit Rishon, you also have Jewish population in Babylonia that's flourishing. So again, we're not so happy with this, but this ultimately ends up being the secret of the survival of the Jewish people. So note that we don't have the same level of destruction, whereas in Bayit Rishon times, you really do see that about, again, 3/4 of the Jewish population is going to be killed off. And with this, I'm even including those who ended up in Babylonia, right? That was the Harash Masker. That was a certain percentage that remained. Again, only about 18,000 that we find recorded here. That over the course of generations, some people said, became closer to 2 million. But again, for this time period, definitely the number is very similar. And if you would even ask me what's worse per capita, again, was definitely during the time of Korban Rishon. So let's go back to this. And we see in Perek Lamed Vav that it's the 4th year of Yoyakim. So if Yoyakim became the king in 609, so it's now 605. Historically, what's going on? The Chaldeans won the War of Carchemish. That means that they have officially inhabited the fallen Assyrian countries. They have now established an empire. By the way, what is really the symbol of establishing an empire in ancient times? The establishment of a capital city. They go back to which ancient capital city to show that they're reviving an ancient empire?
Nineveh.
They go to close, very close to Nineveh, Babel, right? Ancient Babylonia of Nimrod, and they changed their name with the rebuilding of the city of Babel. They changed their name from the Kastim, from the Chaldeans, to the Babylim. From here on in, from 605, they're no longer known as Chaldeans, they're known as Babylonians. And Kach lecha Megillat Sefer. This is so fascinating. Hashem tells him to take a Megillat Sefer. Generally, when Nevi'im write down their Nevuot, what do they write down their Nevuot on? You can look at Yechezkel, you can look at almost every other Navi. They write it in an Igeret form, but it's called a Megillah. And they write it on papyrus, which, by the way, comes from the areas, again, it really comes from Greek, again, which was a city called Papyrus, which was where they got their paper from. Again, this is Papyrus. That's right. Thank you. And that's where we get it, but it was near this area of Babel, which is interesting. And what's even more interesting is that they would write on a Megillah, which meant that they would write on one side of a paper, right, in order, and this was also very interesting, in order to read this out loud in a public forum. So how long were most Megillot? Again, picture, I always say, picture the Disney films, right? Again, enough that you could hold the people's attention hold the audience's attention for a significant amount of time. The longest Megillah that we're familiar with is Megillat Esther, which Sacha Kol is how long?
Not so
long. Again, it's true if you're fasting, it's a little different. But especially for those who live in Yerushalayim, it's not so long, right?
Yeah.
Right, if you read, how long does it take to read? An hour?
Less.
Achan? Less? Thank you. Depending on the Valkyrie. So the person could definitely hold your attention. Versus a Sefer. A Sefer was also, by the way, written. Again, they only had one-sided during this time, interestingly, until the printing press, which created the two-sided. And what's also interesting is that, again, we only see this later on, that people started writing a specific form of stamping so that they can write on both sides. But this meant a one-sided folio. Keep this in mind. Again, that was compiled together, usually sewn together so that they could keep it. The reason for writing a sefer was not for reading it out loud, but rather for a study. And this is what they would do. So notice that Hashem is combining these terms. Write a Megillat Sefer. What is this telling Yirmiyahu?
It's out loud but long.
Thank you. I want you to read this out loud, but it's going to be very, very long. It's now 605. Yirmiyahu has been a Navi from what year? The 13th year of Yoshio, who began to reign in 640. So from 627. How many years worth of Nevoah does he have to write down? 627 to 22 years worth of Nevoah. If I would ask all of you, can you write down, thank you, 22 years worth of, and of what you've learned? That's right. How would you do it?
By subjects.
And now, would you say in Kita Aleph, I learned this? Do you even remember? Like, what you learned in Kita Aleph, Kita
Beth?
And it hasn't been 22 years yet. And mommy would learn, but by subject, right? Do you more or less remember what you learned in math?
Yeah.
I can't tell you when, but I remember learning addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, graphs, all the way to sine curves and calculus, right? More or less. I can't even tell you everything, but the themes, yes. So too, in Limute Kodesh, would you be able to say more or less what you've learned? Thank you. By the way, I learned Shoftim in Kita Dalid, and I learned it again sometime in Kita. I should know this. Okay, at another time. But, Anna, I'll just say, yes, this is what I learned in Sefer Shoftim. In other words, what we're going to find is that Yirmiyahu didn't write down his nevuot, which is a little strange because most Nevi'im, certainly Nevi'im like Yeshayahu, and not only wrote down his nevuot, he rewrote them and had his Talmidim write them down. Can anyone tell me why Yirmiyahu does not write down?
I want something to come true. It's very depressing. I was hoping they
just like Tzfanya, right? So someone just asked me, why are there so few prakim of Tzfanya? There are only 3 prakim. Hardly anyone knows him. He doesn't even associate himself with the king of Menashe because he doesn't want these nevuot to come true. Would you want them to? And therefore, he's hoping I'll just say them. And I won't preserve them because they won't be finalized by virtue of the people repenting. So that's exactly what happens.
But I couldn't have the Gzar Din of Menashe, so something has to happen.
So something has to happen, but maybe it doesn't have to happen like this. So I'll have more like Yeshayahu's Nevuot as it's happening. Right? So Hashem says, no, you have to write it down. This is another way of saying
it's happening.
You have to preserve it because it is going to happen. The Katafte let called the Ramashir Tibetala Yisrael Yehuda, 22 years worth of Nevuot. Ulai Yishmu Beit Yudat Kol HaRa'ashar Anochi Choshev Lasot Lem Laman Yashuv Yishmi Tokorah Besalachti Lavanam Luchatotam. And as Hashem say, this is their last opportunity. Again, if they don't do tshuva now, then 605 is basically like 1939, as we said, the beginning of the end. The Babylonians are going to come. They're going to strip them all of autonomy. This is a year that's known as Galut. Galut doesn't mean that we're sent to the diaspora. Galut means that we lose autonomy in the land of Israel. So Hashem says, this is it. Maybe if they hear 22 years worth of Nevuah, literally a whole Megillah, right? Maybe if they hear a Megillah and they see that everything that you've said until now has come true, maybe they'll finally internalize this is their last opportunity. You notice what Yirmiyahu does. Based on what we've learned, in Zayin Yud Aleph Chafav, his life is threatened right now. He's under house arrest, actually. And Yoyakim doesn't allow him to deliver a public nevuah. So what's he going to do? Give a super-duper public long nevuah? So instead he sends his scribe, Baruch ben Neriah, to write down. He dictates 22 years worth of nevuah, writes them all on a Megillat Sefer. Do you know what Chazal say? They say this Megillat Sefer is what you know as Eicha. That's right. So here you have Eicha. Now, underway as well. Now, why is this significant? What are Chazal saying? If you read Eicha, which is an eyewitness account post-Chorban, Chazal are saying, that's so convincing. Echa Yashva Badad. Yirmiyahu isn't writing it before it happens. He's writing it after it happens. Can you imagine, had Yirmiyahu been wailing and lamenting the 5 keynotes of Echa, don't you think that would have and could have had an effect on the people? So Chazal say he did read Echa. The pshat of Echa is obviously, when did he write it? He wrote it after. That's exactly it. You're reading a post-Chorban eyewitness account, which is horrific. But Chazal want to tell you, through this terminology of Megillat Sefer, that maybe he had even composed Echa in Ruach HaKodesh before it happens. Here we go. Back to the Pshat. The Pshat is that he's writing down 22 years worth of Nevuah. And Yirmiyahu explains to Baruch, and he says in Pasuk Hei, Ani Atzor, I'm locked up, Lo Chalavo Beit Hashem. So instead, you're going to take this Megillah, and you're going to call out B'yom Tzom. Now we're going to see in just a moment, and Pasuk Tet, Vahi Bashana Hamishit Leyoyakim Ben Yoshel Melch Yudah, Bachodesh Hatshi'i, Karu Tzom Lefnei Hashem, the people announced a Tzom. It's Chodesh Hatshi'i. What is the 9th month?
It's
Kislev. Thank you. Yafema. Oh, that's why we have to go back to counting our Hebrew months, everyone.
Sure.
Again, we become too assimilated. Again, I Yafem.
Again,
so Chodesh Hatshi'i. It's Kislev. What do you know about the halachot of Tanit in Kislev? Let's see how.
It doesn't rain.
Thank you. Masechet Tanit. This goes back all the way. Again, to Tanaitic times. Again, pre even Choni HaMagil. Again, that if Rov Kislev goes without rain, what do you have to do? Declare a Tanit. For those who have learned Yirmiyahu in Prakim Yudbet Yugimel Yudalid, he talks to, there's a whole series of Nevuot Al HaBatzorot. He talks about the coming of famines. So this is sometime in the past few years. So by now, you can imagine, the land is, again, in a state of distress. There hasn't been, by the way, when Eretz Yisrael has a famine for more than 2 years in a row, this is a time of crisis. Kal Vachomer, this is before modern irrigation. So the people are dying and thirsting in the streets, so they declare a fast in Kislev. What's going to happen? Do you think people are going to throng to the Beit HaMikdash, even if they're not so allegiant to Hashem? You better believe it. Gena, they're going to come. What a perfect opportunity for Baruch now to read Yirmiyahu's Megillah, and this is exactly what he does. Pasuk Yud Vayikra Baruch Basefer Tivrei Yirmiyahu Beit Hashem Belishkat Gemaryahu Ben Shafan HaSofer Bechatzar Al Yom Petzach Shar Beit Hashem. Notice Gemaryahu gives him his private chamber overlooking the northeastern side where the Sanhedrin was. And Micha Ben Gemaryahu Ben Shafan, do you think you're going to like him?
Yes,
he's Shafan's grandson. He hears these words of Yirmiyahu being read by Baruch ben Neriah, and he says, oh my gosh, 22 years of worth of Nevuah, this really has all happened. And he comes to the Beit HaMelech and he sees the officers of the king and he reports to them, who are these people? People like Elnatan ben Achbor, Maryahu ben Shafan, Tzidkiyahu ben Hananiah, Kol HaSarim, Pasuk Yud Gimel, and Michayahu tells him everything that he just heard. Vayishlachu Kol HaSarim LaBaruch et Yehudi ben Netanya, a fast runner, and they say, we want to hear this ourselves. And sure enough, Baruch starts reading this to them. Anna, they ask, Pasuk Yud Zayin, they ask Baruch, Shalulei Mar Hagid Lanu, Echa Tafka Kol Devar Me'ilam Mipiv. How did you write this, quoting Yirmiyahu, if Yirmiyahu is locked up? So he explains, Yirmiyahu dictated this, and I wrote it word for word, and now I'm reading it. So the Sarim say, uh-oh, Anna, we're going to report this to Yoyakim, but you better go into hiding with Yirmiyahu, because if the king doesn't respond appropriately, then it's not just Yirmiyahu in danger, it's your head as well. So we're going to read it in front of Yoyakim. So they call Yehudi, who is one of the close advisors of the king, and the king, we hear in Pasuk Chaf Bet, is sitting in his winter room, which means that the fireplace is going. Note this foreshadowing. Vayhi kikro Yehudi, shalosh dlatot va'arba yikreha. You know the terms of a Gemara page. We have a daf, and then every daf has two sides. Every side is called an amud. Again, in the time, if you ever open up a Yerushalmi, the original Yerushalmi was written, Kalakavod. You know what those columns were called?
Amudim.
There were four amudim. So in ancient times, beautiful. Gana Chazal call every column an amud. In the times of Tanakh, every column was called, again, every small column would have been called a delet. Isn't that cute? You have a door. And then every two columns were called an amud. Every four columns already was called, you can say, a daf. That's right. Which, by the way, a daf isn't just, you know this. A daf comes from what? What does the word daf, a page, come from? So use building terminology. I have a door. Again, is one column. Then I have an amud, which basically are two pillars. And then a madaf comes from this. Very nice. And also a dofen. What's a dofen? Shalosh dafnot. Again, atay asuka is a wall. A daf comes from dafan. I shall say, wow, that's so cool. Okay,
yeah, cool.
Here we go. Thank you. So he read, again, shalosh dlatot. He read only the third column, va'arba yikra. By the time he got to the fourth one, what did Yoyakim do? I always picture him with one of these envelope cutters. Mm-hmm. Again, batar hasofer, that's what it's called. Again, v'hashlech ha'ta'esh asher ha'la'ach. Then I think of Mary Poppins. Again, he cast it all to the fireplace. Atom kol ha'megila ad'esh ha'la'ach. Can you imagine? Anna, I always said this. You know, you're working. This really happened to me once in eighth grade. This is when I feel like I can only talk to certain people about this. Remember the old Apple computers, and there was no backup hard drive, no nothing. And I'm working on my eighth grade term paper on the righteous Gentiles during the time of the Holocaust.
God,
it was 3 o'clock in the morning. And then, boom, you just press one button. It just has to be delete. And it didn't just delete the last word, meaning the ancient computers would delete your entire document. Can you imagine that? So, and then you have to write the whole thing over. You know that terrible feeling? And you hear it today. It's only when someone, I had a student who said that she lost her hard drive, right, for her term paper. And I keep thinking, you and your Miyahu, you know? This is a terrible thing. You're writing down your magnum opus, 22 years worth of Nevuah. That's basically what we're going to see all the way through Perek Lamed Vav, and it's all destroyed. Sure enough, it's not over yet. Take a look at what Hashem says to Yirmiyahu. It's true that he didn't, unlike his father, Yoshiyahu, when he heard the words of the Sefer Torah, he tore his clothing. But Pasuk Chavdalid, Lo Pachadu, Lo Karu Efekdeyam, Amalach Lechol Avadav, Hashomim Et Kol Dver Me'ila, they stand in a conceited fashion. Gam Analtan Udlayo Gamayo Hefkiu Bamelech, we're all pleading to the king, come on, don't. Okay, sweetie, thank you. Anna, they plead to him, don't burn it, just listen to what he has to say. But in the meantime, too late, sure enough, the king lets out an edict, I want Yirmiyahu and Baruch, the scribe, killed. Lo and behold, Vayistarim Hashem, miraculously, they're hidden. Pasuk of Zayin, Vayidvar Shemel Yirmiyahu, Acharis Rof HaMelech Et HaMegillah, Vetadvarim Asher Katab Baruch Mipir Yirmiyahu Leimor. Hashem says, Shuv, Kach Lecha Megillah, Acharet, Uchtov Ala Kol Hadvarim HaYishonim Asher Hayu Ala Megillah Rishon Asher Saraf Yehukim HaKinzah. That's right, time to rewrite it, the whole thing from scratch. And tell Yoyakim, Komar Hashem, Asher Sarafta Tamgilah Zot Lemar, Madua Katafta Lemar, Bayabo Melch Bavel, Vishkita Tarata Zot Vishbit Rimen Adam Ubema. Wait, you're going to see yourself, the Babylonians coming in here, and tell him that he's not going to stay as a king. He's going to be wiped off. Pasuk Lamid Bet, Vyirmeo Lakach Megillah Acheret, Vayitna El Baruch Ben Neriah Sofer, Vechtova Lamipi Yirmeo, Et Kol Divrei HaSefer, Asher Saraf Yoyakim El Chuda. So he wrote down 22 years worth of Nevuah, namely the first years of Yoshiyahu from the 13th to the 18th year, plus the first 4 years of Yoyakim, va'od nosaf alehem dvarim rabim kahema. But as I mentioned, he's going to already organize it thematically and not chronologically. So what does he do? Over the next, we know that he's going to continue to serve as a Navi for the next 18 years. Any topic that he's going to address over the next 18 years that relates to something that he said for the first 11 years, what will he do? He'll do, basically, I'll use modern word processing, he'll cut and paste it to an earlier nevuah, because it's all thematically arranged anyway. So, for example, if you're taking Calculus 2, instead of putting it in your Tanakh section, where are you going to put it? You started with math, so you're going to put it back in the math section. So as you now review Yirmiyahu, and this is your challenge, now you know how to learn Sefer Yirmiyahu. You start really from Perek Zayin all the way to Perek Lamed Vav, and you're going to hear about what happened during the time of Galut Yehoyachin in 597. You're going to hear about the siege of 589. You're going to hear about the terrible rebellion of Yehoyakim again in his 7th year and then again in his 11th year. And why are they all taken out of context? Because Yirmiyahu basically underwent his own editing by arranging it thematically, which means that what are you going to find from Perek Lamed Zayin all the way through Perek Nun Bet of Yirmiyahu? The only things you're going to hear are the historical data that doesn't fit into what he mentioned earlier. And therefore, you can even do this as an afternoon right now. From Perek Lamed Vav, you're going to be reading everything that happens historically from the 4th year of Yehoyakim all the way until Korban HaBayit. You're not necessarily going to hear the words of rebuke because that was always connected to earlier Tochacha. Instead, you're going to hear about how Yirmiyahu's life was threatened 3 more times, how he was placed in isolation in Beit Yonatan, and then he was taken to the Chatzar HaMatara to live life in the stables of the animals, how he was then threatened by the officers who wanted to kill him and he was put in a cement pit, and how there was Kushi, again, a foreign slave who actually saved him, and how Tzidkiyahu is going to play both sides of the fence. On one hand, he believes Yirmiyahu. On the other hand, he can't actually show that he believes Yirmiyahu because then everyone will accost him of being a traitor, as Yirmiyahu is telling him to surrender to the Babylonians. So basically, from Lamed Vav to Nun Bet, you just have the historical material that doesn't fit into what was mentioned earlier. But more or less, Yirmiyahu is a Megillat Sefer from Perek Zayin all the way to Perek Lamed Vav. And these are where the words of his Tochacha come alive and unfortunately are materialized in Eicha, which was really a different Megillat Sefer, but Chazal associated because in the end it turned out to be the same Megillat Sefer, the same message, that being the ultimate destruction of Am Yisrael due to their lack of listening to the rebuke of Yirmiyahu.
You don't find Nevuah outlined.